Turn with me in your New Testaments, if you would, to Matthew, the 13th chapter. What I'd like to talk to you about this morning is how we as Christians respond to materialism. Think about how you would define materialism. And ask yourself, do you think that you have a problem with materialism? Most of us here are Christians this morning, and we know that we're not supposed to be too attached to the things of this world. And you may sit there and think, well, I'm not a materialistic person. And hopefully we're not. But I would propose to you this morning that just because we are Americans, and simply by the fact that we live in the richest nation on earth, we are at a particular danger to think more of the things of this world than we ought to. Because we have so much, and we take so much for granted. I've got some friends from college that moved to southern Mexico to work in the Lord's vineyard, to preach. And she writes a journal, the preacher's wife writes a journal that you can read on the internet, and I read that. I read that regularly, and she was speaking the other day how she was so thankful to have warm blankets for her family on cold nights, because most of the people that they worshiped with and the people in their community had like one blanket for the whole family. They live in one or two room places, and they all sleep together on the floor, and the whole family will share one blanket. Think about that. These are people that don't have running water, that don't have utilities. And then reconsider whether or not you are a wealthy person. We're all wealthy compared to the population of the world at large. And it's so easy for us to become too attached to the things of this life. Perhaps it's not in the realm of wanting to get rich. Perhaps you don't want to get rich. And we shouldn't want to be rich. That shouldn't be something that we strive for. We'll see that in a few moments. But simply putting too much store in the things that we do have. Putting our faith in the fact that we have possessions, that we have a home, and that we like our home. Putting too much store in these possessions is a danger to all Christians. And we live in a very materialistic society. And it's evidenced by the pop culture that we see around us. And it's expressed in people's desire to have an affluent lifestyle. Isn't that what the whole world wants, is to get more, to have more, to do better? Those shouldn't be the goals of a Christian. Now, all that being said, I think we understand most of those concepts about materialism, but how do we as God's people respond to that? Do we just go out and shake our fingers and say, you shouldn't be that way? And do we shake our fingers at ourselves in the mirror and say, well, I shouldn't be that way? Well, how should we be? What's the response to people that do that, that have those priorities out of whack? In Matthew, the 13th chapter and the 22nd verse, Christ demonstrates and teaches that putting our faith in riches is very foolish. In Matthew 13 and verse 22, it says, "And the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful." What he's talking about here is that one who would accept the word, one who would become a Christian and believe on Jesus Christ, could become unfruitful in the kingdom because he's deceived by the deceitfulness of riches. Materialism is deceitful. It really doesn't provide security. It really doesn't provide something upon which to build the foundation of your life. It's all it's all very deceitful to believe that way and to think that way. We can go back to 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter. In 1 Timothy 6 and 9, we can see that striving for riches can be a snare to the Christian, to someone who believes on the Lord. In 1 Timothy 6, verses 9 and 10, it says, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang. We should not long to get rich. That should not be our desire and our drive in life, because it can lead us into temptations. It can ensnare the Christian and even cause us to apostatize or to fall away when we start pursuing the wrong things in our life. Excuse me. This is not a new problem. We oftentimes think that things are just getting worse and worse in the world around us, and it's never been this way before. But we can read in the Old Testament, and we can see where the wise man Solomon said, there is nothing new under the sun. All these problems that we experience as mortal men have been going on since the beginning of time. I'd like to go back to the book of Isaiah for just a few short minutes here. We're going to read two passages in the book of Isaiah that demonstrate that this problem of materialism was a problem during the time of Isaiah. And he had a response to that. As we talk about what should our response as Christians be to this threat of materialism, let's look and see what Isaiah had to say about it. In Isaiah, the first chapter, Isaiah 1, verses 21 through 23, he says, "How the faithful city has become a harlot, she who was full of justice. Righteousness once lodged in her, but now murderers. Your silver has become dross, your drink diluted with water. Your rulers are rebels, and companions are thieves. Everyone loves a bribe and chases after rewards. They do not defend the orphan, nor does the widow's plea come before them." The children of Israel used to be a nation of justice that defended orphans and widows. And yet now everyone loves a bribe and chases after rewards, he says. He talks here of a very materially minded people, a very materially minded society. And that is the time in which Isaiah lived, as we open the book of Isaiah. Well, as Isaiah the prophet was sent to these people, what did he have to say to this type of people and this type of attitude? I think it's summed up way back in Isaiah the 55th chapter. In Isaiah 55, verses 1 through 3, we have a response that I think addresses the state of mind of these people. He says, "Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come, buy, and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me. Eat what is good, and delight yourself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen that you may live. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you according to the faithful mercies shown to David." He's talking here about how they're spending their money on things that do not satisfy them. They're buying the bread which doesn't give them what they really need. What do they really need? He tells them to come and to buy that which does not cost. Come and obey God, who gives His righteousness freely, who gives His gifts freely without cost. Those are the things that people should be seeking after. Isaiah offered these people, the children of Israel, the things that truly satisfy. You think about, why do people seek after the goods of this life? They're looking to be satisfied. They're looking to be made happy, at least for a time, or to be fulfilled in some way. Yet they can't find that. The children of Israel couldn't find fulfillment and true happiness in the things of this world, the things of this life. And neither can we today find happiness, fulfillment, satisfaction at the very level of our souls, in the things of the world, in material items. Isaiah offered them something spiritual. Be obedient to God, and you shall have an abundance. Delight yourself in abundance, he says there in verse 2. Well, what is this abundance? What are we to seek after if not material things? Today, as we live under the new covenant, Jesus has a very similar response to that of Isaiah, in which we can offer to a world that is truly starving for fulfillment and for satisfaction that which does truly satisfy. Let's look at what Jesus' response to materialism is. Let's turn back to the New Testament, to Luke, the 12th chapter. When we think of the phrase, the good life, what are we thinking of? Thinking of living on Easy Street, perhaps. Not having a care in the world as far as things that we would want, things that would please our eyes. And that's what the world thinks of when they think of the good life. But Jesus taught that there is much more to life than simply material possessions. In Luke, the 12th chapter, in the 15th verse, it says, "And he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Now we know that to be true with head knowledge. We understand that that's true. But do we exemplify that in our lives? Or do we put too much faith in store in the things that we have? And do we judge others around us by what they have? By how much money they have? Or what kind of clothes they wear? What kind of car they drive? Which side of town they live on? Do they live in a good neighborhood? We shouldn't judge people like that, because the person that has the most, that's not what his life consists of, Jesus says. We have to look inside. And that's what's important to God. Let's go back to Matthew a few books back. Matthew, the 6th chapter. In Matthew 6 and 19, Christ says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal." Jesus taught us here that there is great insecurity in the things of this world. We can't put our faith in store in them because they're passing away, because they're corruptible, because they can be taken from us. And those are foolish things in which to put our trust, to put our affections, to put our faith. Not only is it foolish, there's a danger, a real danger to us in putting our faith and our trust in riches. In the same chapter of Matthew 6 there, dropping down to verse, continuing there in verse 21, it says, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." That's the real danger. We're going to keep reading, but that's the real danger. Because where we put our treasure, that's where we put our heart. He continues to say, "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will hold to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Whatever we want out of life is what our heart is going to want to pursue, and that's what our mind is going to turn to. He's talking here about the eye being the light of the soul. Our minds and our hearts are going to turn to what we desire. And if we desire the things of this life, he goes on to say that there's not room to also serve God in that same capacity. We can't equally serve God and seeking after the things of this life. We can't do it. One of them is going to be more dear to our hearts than the other. And so we have to make a choice. We have to make a choice to seek God and to seek the things that endure. And those are the things that Christ has to offer us. The things that cannot be taken away from us. The things that are not corruptible. And once again, I think we have to really examine ourselves and our attitudes towards what we have in this life. We don't know how good we have it unless you've traveled to one of these other countries. We'll call them developing nations sometimes. We call them third world nations sometimes. We don't realize how good we have it. We all have cars to drive. Most of us have more than one car to drive. We have more choices of clothes in our closets than we could wear in a month. We have all these things that we take for granted, and it's so easy for us to think, "Well, I know I'm not supposed to be striving for those things, but I sure do enjoy them." And it's, you hear people say, "Well, it's not a sin to be rich, is it?" Well, no, it's not. But what are you seeking to justify with that attitude or with that question? That I know that's not what I'm supposed to be seeking, but I sure do enjoy it. And if it's not wrong, why can't I have that too? We need to be careful that that's not what we're seeking after. Thus, the message of Jesus is one of correcting our misconceptions, of really seeing through the veil, through all the glitter and the shine of those material possessions and the things of this life, and seeing what is really of value, and discerning what really will satisfy and what really will make us happy. Jesus offers, instead of these material possessions, as he exposes them as being foolish, as being dangerous for distracting us, distracting our hearts, he extends the truly abundant life. And Isaiah used that term, come into the abundance. Turn with me to John, the 14th chapter. Christ extends a truly abundant life. Now, what do I mean by that? Does it mean that when I become a Christian, that I'm not going to have any more worries in this life anymore? Certainly not. And there are some people who claim to be religious that seem to promise that, that if you will give to their church, that God will rain down upon you blessings in this life, and that you will be blessed monetarily for giving to this certain religious organization. Well, scriptures don't bear that out. So what is this abundance that is talked about in the New Testament? John, the 14th chapter and the 27th verse says, peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, nor let it be fearful. Jesus offers a life filled with peace. Peace at the very level of our souls. People want that in life. People want to be happy. They want to be content. Yet they strive and seek after things that don't deliver that. We can have peace through Jesus Christ that will endure for eternity. And this is one of the things that Christ has to offer that we should be seeking. Not after the things of this life. Let's go to Philippians, the 4th chapter. In Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7, a passage that we're probably all very familiar with, Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, shall guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. You know, the world is looking for peace. There's all kinds of self-help books out there and programs you can watch on your television where they're trying to teach you how to live a happy life and a fulfilled life with the wisdom of man. And there's as many opinions on that as there are people in this world. And none of them are based on real truth unless they're based in Scripture. And Paul says here that we should be anxious for nothing. You know, we misuse that word anxious a lot of times in our modern language. We sometimes confuse the word anxious with excited, that you're anxious to go somewhere, you're anxious to see someone, or you're anxious for the holidays to arrive. Well, that's more a meaning of excited, that you're looking forward to that thing. But the word anxious is more something of fear, if you were to look it up. To have anxiety, that's the root word of anxious. We're not to have anxiety or fear for things. No one in the world wants to have that. But we all suffer through those emotions. Paul says, be anxious for nothing. Well, how do we avoid that anxiety? How do we get the peace that he talks about in the next verse? By going to God in supplication and prayer. That's something that Christ has to offer. That's one of his responses to what ails us in this life, is to submit to God, to lay our fears before him, to go to him in prayer, and he will bless us then with peace. A peace that surpasses all comprehension or all understanding. A peace that we can't achieve or that cannot be delivered to us any other way. Jesus also offers something else, and that is a life filled with love. Let's go to John, the 15th chapter and the 9th verse. John 15 and 9. It says, just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Abide in my love. Now, I'm not just up here talking about emotions and about how we should be peaceful and we should have love and being a Christian is such an easy road. Don't misunderstand me. But being a Christian, although obedience is of utmost importance, being a Christian affords us some other blessings that are very real. This should be very tangible that we can feel in our life. And Christ is talking here himself, saying that just as the Father has loved me, Christ felt the love of the Father. Christ then loved us. And he admonishes us there in verse 9 to abide in my love, in Jesus' love. We should feel and know every day of our lives that Jesus loved us. Loved us enough to leave heaven, to come and to be an outcast in this world, the world that he created, and then to die that horrible death so that we could be freed from our sins. The love of Jesus should be something that's very dear and near to our hearts. And to people out in the world, they don't understand what Jesus did. They may not even know what Jesus did for us. And they don't have that love. They can't experience that feeling of knowing that God and His Son loved us that much. That's something that makes up part of this abundant life that Isaiah talked about and that Jesus talks about. That's something that the world can't offer us. And that getting all the goods and riches of this life will never provide to us. And something that we can take with us throughout all eternity. One more thing that he offers us as part of this abundant life is joy. Still here in John, the 15th chapter, let's read verse 11. It says, "These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be made full." Think about that. So many times we think about Christ and we forget about the fact that he lived as a man. And we forget about the fact that he had emotions, just like we do. Verse 11 says that he's teaching the people these things that his joy may be in them. Christ had joy in his life because he had a relationship with the Creator. And he longed for those that he taught to experience that joy as well. Are we a joyful people? Or do we go around with downcast eyes thinking about all the things that we can't do? We can't live like our friends and neighbors. And we can't do some of the things that they do that they say are fun in this life because of the sinful implications or the bad associations. You know, I've met people that look at living a Christian life as a list of do's and don'ts. And they think about all the things they can't do because, yeah, I know what I need to do. I can't do all these other things. And I can't run around with my friends when they do these certain things. And they kind of look at it in a negative sense. The glass is half empty, as the saying goes. But we need to have joy in our lives. And people around us need to see that about us. And we need to demonstrate that to those around us. And that's where we really get into the fact that we can respond to this concept and this idea and this way of life of materialism by demonstrating these virtues in our lives to those around us, to those out in the world, and to other Christians as well. Christians are susceptible to materialism. We read that in 1 Timothy chapter 6 just a few moments ago. And you know, these things come and go in our lives. We may not be stricken by it now, but it may be a certain thing or a certain phase in our life at which time we're susceptible to putting our faith and our trust too much in the things of this life. So we need to constantly be on guard for ourselves, for our fellow brethren, and for those out in the world to try to demonstrate to them that that is not the way to live. And how do we demonstrate that? What did Isaiah offer the people of his day? What did Christ tell people he had to offer them? This life of peace, of joy, of love. Now there's a whole lot more to living a Christian life than just those three virtues. There's the obedience to the commands that we find throughout the New Testament. And I don't mean to underplay that in any way, shape, or form. But I think one way that we can show the world that there's another way to live is by being demonstrative of these virtues in our lives to where they can see it. And they can see that there's something different about Jerry. There's something different about Damon. When things, when something bad happens, when they suffered a tragedy, with their car got wrecked or something, the tornado blew their house away, you know, that would just devastate a lot of people in the world. And as a Christian, it's like, oh, well, I'll get another car. Or, oh, well, there'll be another place to live, and I can find more things to put in the house. That's how Christians should react. We shouldn't be devastated when the things that we have in this life are taken from us or slipped through our fingers. And that's how we can respond to materialism. To communicate this response to a materialistic society, Jesus calls upon us. He calls upon Christians. He calls upon the church. And while it certainly entails proclaiming the gospel in its entirety, I'd like to suggest that some additional things about our response to materialism. We should exemplify Jesus' response, the thing that he had to offer. Exemplify those virtues that we talked about. We must possess peace. We must possess love for God, love for our fellow man, and we must be joyful people. Or why would anyone want to have what we do? If we are not happy, if we don't have joy in our lives, why would someone want to be like an old grouch or an old grump? We can't walk around that way. Let's go to, stay there in John, the 15th chapter, verses 10 and 11. It says, "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full." If we keep his commandments, we will abide in his love. Let's not forget about the commandments, the obedience. But that is part of abiding in his love. And to exemplify that to others, we need to be obedient to what Christ has taught us. And that will show that we are abiding in the love that Jesus has to offer. As individuals, secondly, we must not depend upon material things for true happiness. Let's turn to 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter again. We must not, as Christians, depend too much upon material things for true happiness. Have you ever known someone that shopped to make themselves feel better? I've known several people like that in my life. That they go buy things because they think that's going to make them happy. They go buy things because they don't feel good inside and they think that getting something new will bring them happiness. And there's some people that, well, I work with such a person that always has to have the next thing that's coming out. I don't care what it is. Had to have an iPod. And now the iPod's sitting over in the corner drawing dust. They didn't use it for hardly any time at all. They had to have a super fancy coffee machine that would grind the coffee and then brew it and do it all at once. And they had to have that, and it cost a lot of money. And now they don't use it, and it'll be sold in a garage sale. And I mean, it's just a pattern of that. You can see with this person that they're always buying something, thinking that that's the next big thing. I got to have that, and then it's cast by the wayside. We can't, as Christians, be that way. We can't put our faith and our trust in finding happiness in getting material objects. So as we seek to respond to the threat, to the danger of materialism, we have to be sure that we're not slipping in to those patterns. In 1 Timothy 6, and verse 6, it says, "But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. And if we have food and covering, with these we shall be content." We as Christians need to be content with what we have been blessed with. If the world sees that we're not content, that we think we need to have more, 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 they're not going to buy into the fact when we tell them that they need to live like the Bible says, that they need to seek after this abundant life that Christ has to offer. We need to be content as Christians. That heeds back to the question I talked about a moment ago. What if we find ourselves with an abundance? Each of us in this room has an abundance compared to so many in the world. Is that wrong? Is it wrong to be an American? No, it's not wrong. It brings with it specific challenges. It brings extra temptations. But if you find yourself there, you can be pleasing to God as well. Paul found himself in various stages of having and having not. And in Philippians, the 4th chapter, in the 11th verse, it says, "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means. And I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, of both having an abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." Paul didn't care what situation he found himself in. If he was in want, when he says he was in want, we're probably talking about want for covering and want for food. He was cold and he was hungry on more than one occasion. And in prosperity, he had everything he needed. There was nothing else that he needed. He had plenty. Either way, he was fine. He was content. Why is that? Because his focus was on the horizon of heaven. He didn't care about his situation in this life. That was just a detail. And when he says he can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, he's talking about spiritual things. He could accomplish anything from the Lord, for the Lord, as long as he was on God's side and he was being obedient and doing what the Lord wished him to do. We need to be content as Christians and not constantly thinking we need more, we need more, we need more. Our focus needs to be on spiritual things, on the virtues that we're to instill in our lives as Christians. Let's go back to 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19. It says, "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all good things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed." That's exactly what we're talking about here this morning. That we're supposed to forget about the treasures of this life. Instead, store up for yourselves a treasure of the good foundation for the future. That's that abundant life that will bring us an eternity in heaven, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. When we're seeking after material things, we're trying to grasp at the wind. It won't satisfy. We can't hold on to it. When we leave this life, we're going to leave without it. And yet, Isaiah offered, Christ offered, and we can offer through Jesus Christ to everyone that which is life indeed. That's what is of true value. And that is what is of true import. But he's talking here to those who are rich in this present world. And we each fit that category in some way, shape, or form. Now there's people even in this country that are much more well off than others. But all of us have the capacity to share. And to rather than being concerned about being rich in money, he admonishes us there to be rich in good works. Now, as we talk about responding to materialism, how can we demonstrate that to our fellow Christians, to those that are in the world? They can see us sharing of our blessings. They can see, and I've seen this actually happen before, where Christians are so oftentimes ready to give and willing to give. And people in the workplace perhaps will be astounded that you would give something to a needy family, that you would take your time, whether it's when the weather turns cold or oftentimes around the holidays we do this, Thanksgiving and such, people will give food to those who are less fortunate. People will give in times of need, when there's been a disaster, there's been a death or whatever. And people in the world are oftentimes amazed by that because they're so selfish, because they don't understand this concept of giving and of selflessness. But we need to embody that as Christians, sharing with the blessings that have been afforded us to demonstrate that abundant life that Isaiah spoke of and that Christ spoke of, so that they will see the value of it and want to have that too. Being content and willing to share goes a long ways towards demonstrating Jesus' response to materialism. And it really means something to people who are out in the world. The rampant materialism in our society provides us with an opportunity. Materialism leaves one in a state of spiritual malnutrition. People that are caught up in this are not satisfied. They are not fulfilled. And eventually they'll realize that they need something else. They may not realize it at every moment. Sometimes it takes just that right moment of vulnerability for them to see through the facade that they've been building around themselves and realize that they need something else. And that's an opportunity for us as Christians. For when they make that realization, they're finally oftentimes ripe for the true feast which Christ has to offer. The abundant life that is not corruptible, that will not pass away, and that will endure for all eternity. But if those that are trapped in materialism, in seeking for the things of this life and of this world, if these people are going to believe that such is possible, we need to make sure that we are offering them that abundant life. That they see it in us, embodied in the way that we live. It's very possible for them to pick up the Scriptures and to find it on their own. It's possible. But we're told to be the light of the world. And that's the example that we have in the New Testament. They didn't just set out on mailing campaigns. Christ didn't instruct them to find as many scribes as they could, copy the letters as many times as they could, and simply mail them out, and they were done. What were they instructed to do? To go into the world to teach. And to live in the world and to be an example. And that's what we are to do today as well. We need to make sure that we are offering them an abundant life as a viable alternative. That they see that it works for us. Because God said it will, and it does. Are we experiencing the peace that surpasses all understanding? The love that passes knowledge and the joy that is inexpressible? Those should be very tangible, real things in our lives. And we need to embody those and embrace those so that we can offer them to the world around us. Think about this subject of materialism. Not just that we shouldn't be that way, but that we should combat this by showing the alternative to the world around us. And let us always give thanks to God for the spiritual blessings that He has given us. At this time this morning, we'd like to extend the Lord's invitation. If there are any present who need to make their life right with God, the time is now. Please come forward as we stand and as we sing.